1, 2, 3, 4, Medium Talk.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Medium Talk, the Blackout Tips premium interview show, where I talk to different people that I find interesting. This lady that I have on the show today, caught my attention lately because, I was one of the people that was in the camp of not seeing 12 Years a Slave. It's been quite a popular stance among black people. It's been very diverse. It's been very divisive. Some people are like, I'm not going to see it. Some people are like, I got to go see this. And, I noticed whenever it came up in my circles, I would just see on Twitter that at Minnow Warrior would have something to say. And I said, hey, you know, you're talking a lot about this. You seem to know more about it than most of us. And she was very adamant that people should go see this. So I said, Miss Friday Foster, why don't you come talk about it on Medium Talk with me? And she's like, I don't know. You know, I'm busy. I got things to do. I'm traveling. I said, you need to come talk about this. People want to hear what you have to say. I know you've been on the Blackout Tips before. Have a background in film already. You write for Angry Black Woman Watch, which you can find at abww.wordpress.com. I was like, this seems like a good person to talk to if I could just get her to come on. And she, after much work, she obliged me and came on. Thank you for coming on. Friday, I'll refer to you. I don't want to put your government out there, but, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you, Rod. It's a pleasure. After being blackmailed,
talk
about that.
I definitely pursued you very hard. Like I was like, I want to hear what she has to say, and other people do. And I don't know that a live show is the best place for it because you get so much feedback and opinion, and people are in the chat room. I was like, we should do this one on one where you know you can say whatever you want to, and you don't have to worry about somebody being offended or defensive about it.
Well, the thing, first of all, that I want to clarify is that I'm an African-American because I'm of African descent, and I'm American citizen. But I'm of West Indian background, Jamaican, Grenada, and was born in England and raised in England, Canada, and New York. So I have a different perspective on a lot of things, and it can piss people off sometimes, but I also taught African American studies for several years too. So my perspective comes from being raised in another culture, and also from actually, you know, learning and teaching this stuff. Mm. I think it's important to see this film because it's the first film ever in over 100 years of English and American film to ever actually be based on a slave narrative. I mean, there are liberties because it's, you know, a film, but it's the first one. And people like, you know, the reaction to, I don't want to see this from people that I respect just kind of blew me away. Mm. Papa Pope wrote something about, you know, how this divides people and shit. Now, Papa Pope, Joe Morgan, 20 years ago, was in one of my favorite films called Brother from Another Planet. Mm-hmm. Do you know what he played in that movie?
A slave?
Yes! A runaway slave! Ding, 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 ding! I'm like, huh?
So, like,
you can expect something like that from, you know, what is his name? Round, round, or rebound.
Oh, what? Charles Barkley?
Yeah, you can expect something like that from Charles Barkley, but I didn't expect that from somebody who's played a slave, who's been in a movie like that, who's been in black movies, and, you know, and there are, you know, just folks on Twitter, up to people of that caliber, say, we don't need to see this when it's never been seen. You've never seen this. The closest that people have come to this there's another independent film called Sankofa by a African, born in Africa, American director named Haile Selassie, and that movie is called Sankofa. And when that movie was released, it was released in two theaters in California. And this was about 20 years ago. The management got so scared of the emotions that black people had leaving the theater, Universal Artists pulled the picture. And the director had to go from empty theater to empty theater all over the country and show his film. So my number one thing about this is people like, they don't want to see no slave movie or anything. They've never seen a slave movie. You know, people, there are a few people, you know, the Black Power, I'm awareness, conscious folks, yeah, they've seen Sankofa, and I've taught Sankofa, and it's a very hard film to watch every year when I have to show, when I was teaching and I have to show it to students. But, you know, it's like other people, other ethnic groups don't stray away from seeing their hardest time. And this is the first time it's been done. It is an experience. It's not a film. People are like, I won't enjoy it. I'm like, you're not supposed to enjoy it.
Right. Now, I have seen Sankofa, for the record. Like, I saw it when I was in college. I went to a historically black college, Fayetteville State University, and they showed it in the student union one day. I don't even remember why I went. I just was like, oh, something going on in student union. And I stayed, and it was just one of those like, wow, this film is going all in. Like, I can't believe people are going to let this, like, be watched in theaters. And apparently I was right. You can't watch that in the theater.
Yes, you were.
Yeah.
And the thing is with Sankofa, it's like a regular movie that starts with titles and starring and all that stuff, and you follow this lady, and it's kind of magical, and it takes this modern lady back. This movie does not do that. You sit down in the theater, and it plops you right into the action. You see Solomon Northrup dazed and confused down in a slave plantation with a white overseer saying, now you need to be rude. This is how you cut this cane. there's no like, let's soft pedal this for a little while and have some slaves singing in the cotton. No, it goes right into it.
Right.
And you see his life in flashbacks.
Now, I saw it, like, here's the thing, like, people that don't want to see it, that are comparing it to, like, say, The Butler and, The Help and, you know, other movies, even, Fruitvale Station, where it's just like, they have a fatigue or, they're almost scared to awake the emotions that come from seeing something like this. Like, how do you feel about those people? Do you feel like, is there any empathy or sympathy for them? Or is it just completely like, man, you need to just go see it?
Well, the thing, I have empathy for it, but it's like, part of you, you're denying part of your history and denying, and if you do that, you're unable to make the connections to why we are here the way we are. There's a part where one dude is talking, you know, about black people being apes and monkeys and all of that stuff, and it could have been taken out of any right-wing, you know, any right-wing or white supremacist website today. Mm-hmm. And I guess because of my background, and because of the way slavery is taught in the West Indies, because my parents were educated in that, and they made sure I was, and, you know, a lot of people who were first generation get that. And plus, my dad owned a black bookstore when I was a kid. So there was always this talk around. And another thing, you know, when I was a young child, people, you know, the Caribbean countries, the parents, the African countries were becoming independent. And everybody's eyes were turned to the civil rights movement, which was moving like into black power and all of that. So that was constant talk at the dinner table, you know, after I watched cartoons. And I've kind of absorbed that. Mm. And plus, it's in, like, my family is from Jamaica and Grenada. Two of the earliest countries when it comes to slave rebellions. The most slave rebellions in the Caribbean were in Jamaica. In Grenada, this tiny island, I guess you call it mixed race these days, planter, and his freed slaves. Hello?
Yeah, I thought you dropped the phone. I was like, you there? Well, man, it sounded like you dropped the phone for a second.
Okay. I don't know what happened right there. Passed off the English for close to a year. Mm-hmm. The slaves in Jamaica were so ornery that the English just gave them a piece of Jamaica and said, you know, if you stop pulling slaves and you know, raiding plantations, you can have this piece of land. You know, the people called them Maroons. And they're like, okay. But they never stopped doing what they were doing. And part of that they were able to do because black people were the higher part of the population. Mm-hmm. But people in America don't know that there were 250 slave rebellions right here in America.
Yeah, I saw you say that on Twitter, and that's something that I didn't know, honestly. And I've had, you know, some pretty good history lessons and classes and stuff about black history and stuff, but that's definitely something that I never came across.
Yeah, because before this movie, you had this pattern up until the 1970s when you had exploitation movies. Slavery was this nice, calm thing that black folks was happy in. Because we were singing, and we was happy, and we loved taking care of our white mixes, and all of that. You know? And then in, you know, exploitation, you got drum, and you got mandingo, and okay. So you got these films where black people were allowed to get a little pissed off. But that was because these, you know, people who were their slave masters were crazy as hell. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really immoral and really terrible. And, you know, even with Roots and the feeling that we get there, you know, you always have this nice white person.
Yeah. The white saviors, they call them.
Yeah, the white saviors. Even with people like, I've seen Ben Go and Chain, I don't need to see this. Number one, that's not a slave movie. Mm. And it's also, you know, it's a buddy movie. And if you've watched, you know, Austin Eastwood's Spaghetti Westerns, it's a black and white buddy movie done like that.
Right.
It just happens to take place during slavery.
Yeah, I agree. I think Django Unchained is like a slave background to a Western. It's not really a movie about slavery.
Yeah. And you rarely in slave movies actually see slaves working.
Mm-hmm.
Most of this movie is about slaves doing brutal, black backbreaking work.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the pain. You see the fact that, you know, in addition to Solomon, you know, going from this person who's like, I'm a free man, I have rights, to somebody like, no, Mister, I don't know how to read to survive. You know, your heart breaks.
Mm.
And so there's no nice person, white savior in this movie at all.
Now, let me ask you about this too. Like with Django, do you feel some type of like, is there any, I know that like amongst like the black historian type community, there's almost like a negative feeling towards Django Unchained. And I watched that movie too. I don't have any negative feelings. I actually found it entertaining, but I never viewed it as anything more than for entertainment. But I think a lot of people are upset because Quentin Tarantino, when he was doing interviews for it, said that it was more accurate than even Roots, the TV series. And I think he's kind of paid a price for saying that shit ever since.
If you saw what LeVar Burton wrote him very kindly, you know, he very eloquently, you know, put the middle finger up.
It was so good, by the way. I want to hear him speak more. I had no idea that he just spoke like that. I thought only you had to read a script in order to be that eloquent, and he was beautiful about it.
Yeah, did you hear him? This is a little off topic. Talk about Stocky Frisk and what he does as Green Rainbow Man, as Joey LaForge, as Cooper Kente when he gets stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it was on CNN, and people were like, well, why do you do that? And he said, because I'm a black man in America. And it just shut the shit down. Yes, he's very eloquent, and, you know, Quentin Tarantino has a gigantic ego, and thinks when he tells black, quote-unquote, stories, or black characters, because he and Samuel Jackson are homies, that he can do it better than any black person. Mm. And he, you know, often, he does that often. He's done it regularly. But, yeah, historians would like history to be told.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen it. I know eventually I will see it. And I also know that a lot of the scenes with Kerry Washington were cut.
Yeah, they were.
Because they were brutal. And the audience didn't like it because why is Olivia Pope being hurt?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they ever do a director's cut, I'd rather see that. And that's another thing that makes people uncomfortable with this film, in addition to it being a real depiction of a slave life, in addition to there being no friendly, you know, let me save you. I mean, Brad Pitt was like, okay, I'll mail this letter. And his abolitionist friends came and got him. Mm-hmm. But there was no, hey, let me teach you how to bounty hunt and you can go get your wife. Or there's no, like, Amistad.
Right.
First 20 minutes, Amistad, black people in the dark, being scary, taking over shit.
Yeah.
And the rest of the movie is, let's see, how can white people save these black people?
And I'm assuming without that element in most films, it probably never will test well, you know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. the kind of audience that wants to see this kind of want to see a reflection of themselves, and I mean white people, they want to see a reflection yeah. of themselves, like, if I was back then, I would have said, no, this is wrong. These are people. And then everyone would have stopped and said, I didn't know that. And then slavery would have been over and it would have been fine. And I feel like they always put that character in all of these movies. So the audience won't just check completely out and go, I don't want to see this.
Well, we do it too. I mean, I forgot who it was, but somebody like, and Eddie Murphy's generation of comedy was like, if I was a slave and, you know, I would have, you know, told these people off. I don't know which concert movie it is.
Yeah.
But he goes into this whole thing, you know, about how he would have took the whip and beat them back. And
yeah, you ain't gonna beat me, massive. He was like, you ain't going to beat me, massa. I'm the massa now. I remember that. Yeah.
No, that didn't happen. there's a scene that is just so brutal. then, okay, you know, spoiler warning, you know, there's going to be things said about the movie where Solomon, you know, there's this low-level overseer. There's this punk dude who was also in Looper, and he basically plays the same role. He's a punk ass that nobody pays any attention to, and is basically, you know, the low man on the totem pole. Mm-hmm. And he just cannot stand Solomon. So he decides he's going to beat him down. Mm-hmm. And Solomon, you know, this is the first, I think this is the first NASA he has. So he's still got some of his free stuff. And he beats his ass. And he tries to string him up. And the top oversteer says, this is not your property. You can't do this. This man, you know, is worth money. If you pull that tighter, I will shoot your ass.
Yeah.
He and he said, you know, y'all gonna back him up or y'all gonna get the man out of here. And they left.
He was only saved by being someone's property. Like, he wasn't even saved because of rights or any positive connotation of such equality. It was simply, that's not your car to kick.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, if this was another kind of movie, he would have gone, taken him down, given him some water, whatever. No, he was left there.
Mm-hmm.
And people are going by in the background, and things are, you know, business as usual. As hours go by and the night goes, and finally the owner takes him down and says, you too much trouble, I gotta sell your ass.
Right.
You know, that the brutality was normal.
Yeah, he was in trouble just for trying to leave. Like, he like, and everyone understood it. I remember one sister even gave him some water, and that was like a big, like, oh, I don't even know if she should be doing this. She's gonna get in trouble for giving him water so that he doesn't literally choke to death on this noose.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I wanted to ask about too, like, what did you think about, you know, some of the reviews for the movie? Because I've noticed a lot of the reviews give it a lot of credit for, you know, the how beautiful it looks, how well it was shot. They give a lot of credit to the white actors for playing, you know, racist people and stuff. But what do you think about, because I think that they overlook some of the portrayals of the slaves. Like, I thought the lady who played Patsy was great, but...
I was waiting to talk about Patsy.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting ready for this. I was reading more of the reviews, and there were two that got me. One that, you know, Elon James talked about on This Week in Blackness, and one I read by the actor James Franco. And it's really, you know, it's just mind-numbingly insane how they did not see these black people as human. They couldn't see their humanity.
Mm-hmm.
The editorialist from the Washington Post, whose name, you know, I can't remember, but let's just call him Whitey McWhiterson. he basically said, I didn't know slavery was this bad.
Oh, is this the same dude who was says people used to be could be disgusted by interracial relationships?
Oh yes, he said that the next day.
Okay, I'm gonna find his name, but go ahead, keep talking. I'm gonna find it.
Yes, and you know the people were beaten and sold and families were ripped apart. You know, the seals have dropped from my eyes. I now understand. And then the next day, he talks about, you know, the Tea Party people aren't that bad. How can you blame them for being disgusted about interracial marriages?
Yes.
This, when the mayor of New York, the new mayor of New York, is married to a black woman and has two natural hair kids and a son with a 6-inch afro.
Yes. And his name is, his name is Richard Cohen.
Yes. It's just like, and this is what the Washington Post is, one of the most prestigious newspapers in this country. And this is who you still hire.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and then we have James Franco. This, I've been following this jackass for a while. He's this hipster actor who everybody loves. He has this tendency to school shop and drop in on schools and take a class and everything. Mm-hmm. And he's done this like at 10, 15 different schools. And he took a class with the only black professor at NYU. And this crazy professor decided, well, maybe this dude should attend class. And he should do his assignments and whatever. And, of course, he wasn't socializing with him. He was socializing with the other white professors and the dean. And he even put the dean in this short film that he had. So what did he got? A D in this class. He had a fit. And he went and talked to his boys and had this man fired. So he's been on my list for a while.
Right.
Because I've had similar things to me because I can't keep my mouth shut. Because in theory, film studies in that area is a very narcissistic kind of thing and full of very, quote-unquote, well-intentioned white liberals who feel like they know everything but will say the most racist things. I'm sure you see that I write, you know, a lot, and tweet a lot about black feminists, and he's got a lot of books on Angry Black Women Watch, plus, you know, just news about black women that really make the cut.
Mm-hmm.
So this dude, you know, I've been, you know, he's been on my radar for a while. This dude writes a review of this list, just praising the white actors of all they went to. He never mentioned Chiwetel Ejiofor's name at all.
Wow.
Just put in, you want to put James Franco and you know, 12 Years a Slave, and you're like, did this dude see the same movie I saw?
Wow.
You know, it's just amazing, but it's a part of this way that many white people see film. It's like they cannot watch films with people of other colors unless it's like some really artsy-fartsy foreign movie that tells about the degradation of these people, of course. They can't see the regular humanity, and we see this in regular movies like, oh, damn, who's a black person? Who's a nigga? I didn't know that. Oh, my God. My life is ruined. You know, and you know, I've watched anime since, you know, since in England it came out a lot earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was little, Black and White Astro Boy was on when I was like 4.
Yeah.
So I watched anime all my life, and people are like, why are you a grown woman still watching anime? I'm like, because I can.
Right, yeah, right.
So, I watched The Last Airbender. You know, I used to have the excuse of watching it with my baby cousins. Now I have no excuse. Those are Asians.
Right.
They're not white people.
Until M. Night Shyamalan gets a hold of them.
I'm like, dude, these people look like you. You put yourself in all these other movies. Why don't you put yourself in this one?
I really didn't get that. Like, that was one of the weirdest whitewashings I've ever seen in a film, was because Karen and I are huge The Last Airbender fans, and we showed up to that movie, and I want to say the first 12 minutes was just us looking at each other like, who are these white people? It's like, what happened to the Asian culture? What happened to, you know, this is in, you know, on the TV show, it feels like, well, this is kind of China. This culture is Japan. This culture is India. And then the, you know, this culture is, you know, like the Eskimos or.
Nah. And you went, I'm like, why would you want to be here? Yeah, I was like, I think I'll pass on this and wait for Legend of Korra to come out. You know, hopefully, you know, if they make a movie like that, they'll actually put their own people in it.
Yeah, hopefully, M. Night is nowhere near it. But what you were saying earlier, though, like, in James Franco's review, he gives Michael Fassbender all his props. And that's one of the things that's been bothering me about, you know, it's kind of like when you watch a movie like this, it's almost like an undertaking because you're kind of becoming responsible, or at least you're going to start hearing other people's opinions on it and shit like that. And I've kind of avoided even really talking about it that much because, I feel like most of the people who review it just give props to the white actors. Like, I can't believe a white person could play a racist in 2013. This is amazing. And even before I saw the movie, I was like, it must be good because they got actors with careers to play racist people, which you don't see, you know, to be quite honest, typically, even in a movie like 42 about Jackie Robinson, they go get like a career journeyman, actor to play the most racist person. Because most people with a name won't do it. In this movie, you have Michael Fassbender doing it. You have Paul Giamatti doing it, which he's barely in the movie. And just
I wanted to hurt him seriously.
Yeah,
I wanted to hurt him. Smug. What is his name? Okay, that's how much of a nerd I am. Sherlock. Cumberbatch.
Yes. Cumberbatch is in it.
Yeah, you've got these big name actors. Well, one thing is that the gentleman who directed it,
Steve McQueen,
and Fassbender, they're homies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the third film that has, you know, won awards. You know, and his name is Steve McQueen. So I think in America, a lot of people thought he was white.
Yeah, I was told he was white before I went to see it. People were like, can't believe a white man directed this. I was like, for real? White man directed this movie? And, yeah, I Googled him. I was like, this dude ain't white. Why'd you tell me that?
Yeah, and the thing is that people with West Indian names have very English names. Like, my government name, it's not English. It's completely Hebrew.
Mm.
When I show up, some people are looking at me like, you're not the person. I get J date things on my on my advertisement because people look at my name and think that I'm, you know, completely Jewish. So I get, you know, black people meet nice Jewish men right underneath. I'm like, okay. So, you know, people don't, you know, people thought he was white. And the first two movies he made with Fassbender, even though there were black people in them, they were black people in Shame. They weren't black people in Hunger. You know, thought he was white when number one was not white. And as a black Brit, it gives him some leeway to talk about this. And also, once people know he's black, if they know any history, and they know the history of slavery in the Caribbean, they can't say, this man wasn't no slave. He wasn't no slave in his background. He can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Caribbean slavery was so rough that the typical lifespan on an island like Haiti or Jamaica was 10 years after you got off that boat.
Wow.
So, you know, he had the credentials. He had the actor. He got the money out of there. This movie couldn't have been made in this country.
Mm.
It really couldn't have. Because, you know, people would have given him the money and said, can't you make so-and-so just a little nicer? Even though it is an actual slave narrative written by a literate black man. Some slave narratives, you know, there are those like Frederick Douglass's and Harriet Jacobs. These were literate people who were able to completely write down exactly what they wanted to say. A lot of these slave narratives were, you know, oral things that were edited, you know, by abolitionists. But there are enough slave narratives out there written by black people who had literature, who knew how to write, that you can't dismiss this. Like, there's this Time Entertainment, the true story of 12 years of a slave. We break down what is fact and fiction in a new movie about slavery. It's a hit piece because it says Solomon Northman was a free, Northrop was a free man living in upstate with two children and a wife before enslaved. Really, mostly fact. He had three children. Big deal. And it goes on like this. And then it gets down to Mary Epps injures Patsy in a jealous rage. Fiction. It's not fiction. All the comments, like, list the page number and quote exactly where Solomon Northrop talks about how Mistress Epps would beat on this woman. But and the other comments were basically like, this is bullshit. You're basically trying to minimize this movie and whitewash history.
Well, I think people don't want to accept how brutal slavery was. Like, that was one thing that, that is kind of like, I'm of two minds about it, right? Because on the one hand, I think that this movie's great because it's unflinching. And that's why I think, you know, I enjoy seeing it, was because it didn't turn away and go, like, even the most wholesome white person in this movie is from Canada, and it's still like, these niggers are humans. Like, it's still like, it's not redeeming, really, you know? But then also, I think a lot of people, like, they know, they have certain emotions and attachments and feelings to the things that they've learned about slavery already. And I think, there's like a fight almost that you get into. Like you said here, people are trying to discredit the factual basis of this film because there's almost a fight. Like, I don't want to admit that this was real. And it feels like that's the whole fight against the film, really, is everybody kind of wants to be like, I don't want to exist in a place where I have to admit that this was a real thing and watch it happen.
Yeah. And I think, you know, part of the reason I make people upset is because I grew up with this. I mean, people sing along with Bob Marley songs, not realizing this is what he's talking about. Because part of it is in Patois and Slave Code. Like, he has a song called Casey's Crazy Ballheads Out of Town. It's not a happy song if you're a white person. But they'll go along and sing it. But they have no idea what he's talking about. You know, in the songs, he invokes the names of rebellion leaders and people who fought for independence and whatever. It's in the music, it's in the culture, it's in the plays people see. So it's a different view. Like, people are like, oh, you like James? Are you going to see the film? I was like, nope. You really, if you don't want me to piss you off, you really don't want me to go into why. I'm not going to see that. But yes, I think on both sides there are people who don't want to admit this. And the last thing that kind of throws that in is Patsy and the treatment of black women in this movie. You know, it starts with the woman on the boat.
Yeah, that loses her kids.
And the fact that Michael K. Williams gets shanked. Trying to protect her. You know? One of the badass Negroes we got out there.
Right.
You know, Omar got shanked for trying to protect the black women from getting raped.
Without a word.
Yes.
Like, that scene is crazy powerful, because he basically just puts his hand on that white man and the instant reflex is to kill him and walk away. Like, I don't know what the hell was into that nigger, and that's it.
So, and then, you know, you get to, you know, Paul Giamatti's, you know, genteel slave auction. And this woman is begging, begging to keep her son and her daughter. And you can see they're talking about these people and touching these people like they're livestock. Now, there was, he walks by this naked, white, black woman and says she'll be great as a maid. Why she got to be naked?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not the kind of maiding they're talking about. And then when, you know, they're striking a deal for her son, and she's just literally using it in the background, and he's making a deal for, you know, you got to pay more for the daughter because she ain't one of them big old dark-skinned Harriet, you know, mm-hmm. Negroes. If I keep her, she's going to make me a ton of money.
Right.
Because he can breed her.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know how many people know that there's special slave markets to breed black women.
Yep. We went to Charleston and we went to the slave market.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like they have like mm-hmm. a museum there, like a history museum for like, and it's just, it's kind of small, but there's a lot of like facts and stuff everywhere. And you get physically in the entrance of one of the old slave marts. And, they talk about a lot about the private auction houses and how, mm-hmm. you know, it was illegal to sell slaves in public for a long time in South Carolina, but that didn't mean that slavery stopped or that selling slaves stopped. It just meant you didn't do it publicly. You did it in private auction houses, and it was more for, you know, people with more money and whatnot. And that was one of the things in this movie that I thought they did a good job portraying, because in other movies, it's always like this big public spectacle. I got slaves for sale, 2-for-1, buy them off, half price, Black Friday. You know, like this was just straight up like a very private and cold mechanical discussion of the value of a slave to a person. And it was almost more blood curdling and more scary to watch someone negotiate the price for someone's family being split up right in front of them, you know, without a whole lot of pomp and circumstance.
Yeah. And New Orleans and Charleston were the largest markets of this fancy girl slave market was made. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, they tried to find the right blend of, you know, black women, hot constitution, you know, lusty wholeness, you know, as we call it today, you know. I don't know if you've been reading the hashtag Fast Tail Girl.
Yeah,
it goes back to all of that. This man looked at this like probably 8 or 9 year old girl and already saw her as a sexual object that he could make money off of.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and this woman in the background, nobody's hearing her tears, nobody's hearing her beg. Nobody's just going about their business as usual.
Yeah, they don't care.
And then when she gets sold with Solomon, she can't stop crying. She can't stop crying, which, you know, today we can see as depression.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Solomon still was, you know, he was a man, and he was also new to this. And he was like, I will not yield to this victimhood and this, you know,
right.
this whatever. He doesn't realize until she tells her story of, you know, the fact that she didn't want to do this, but she gave in to her master, and for 9 years, she lived like the woman that we see later,
mm-hmm.
the Alfred Woodard plays. And then, you know, she was sold. He sold her, and he sold his own child. And often when I was teaching, I would tell my students, just think how much wealthier African Americans would be if we could claim the inheritance that all those children should have had mm-hmm. instead of not getting their inheritance and enriching their white father and his children. Mm. So, you know, it's when she was telling her story, I just started crying. And for me, that wasn't the first time. That was not the last time I was going to cry, because then we moved to Patsy. And Patsy, she needs to get all of the awards. All the awards.
Yeah. Patsy, and also that first lady, too, that, like, the one that was crying because her scene where she's finally confronted by Solomon, where he's like, stop crying, basically. Mm-hmm. That scene is very, very powerful because it does add a different perspective because, you know, even as an audience member, I think it's filmed so that we start feeling like, man, she is crying. Like, she got to stop crying for her own good because these white people don't give a fuck. And then when she explains it, you're kind of like, okay, I can see that. Like, what are you going to do? You're still human.
Exactly. And it goes to this speaking that we hear every day. You know, I went to the comments on IMDb, and there's all this stuff. When are you going to stop making all these slavery movies? Mm. There are thousands of movies made about black people, with all white cast, all year long. And people are like, we got slavery movies like The Butler. I'm like, no, there were no slaves in The Butler. Django Unchained. Why can't we forget about this?
Mm-hmm.
Yet another Holocaust movie is, you know, critical, you know, critically acclaimed, you know, commercials on TV every day, the book thief is on, and we don't hear anybody saying, when are we going to stop making Holocaust movies?
Right. Yeah, here's my question. My question for that is, because people say, like, because that was the thing I noticed that people were saying was like, when are we going to stop making slave movies? I'm tired of seeing slave movies. And I was like, name the movies. You know what I mean? Because I think once you start naming them, you realize they're actually few and far between. I think what people mean to say, or what they really are saying, is when are we going to stop making movies about the struggles of black people historically and how, you know, we overcome and persevere? Like, why can't we have other types of stories? But then when they say that, I bring up the fact that we do have those movies that come out. Now, people may or may not see them, but like, The People's is not a movie about black slavery and struggle at all. Best Man Holiday, which I enjoy tremendously, is not a movie about black slavery and black struggle. But there's black people in it. A movie like, Blue Caprice, like, there's movies with black people in it that aren't always about this. I think, you know, it says something about Hollywood because of the way that certain movies get pushed towards us or don't get pushed towards us. And maybe there's some validity to the fact that, you know, I probably will never see an advertisement for Blue Caprice. I'll probably, you know, after the first weekend, I won't see an advertisement for Best Man Holiday. Stuff like, I get where people say, you know, get that from. But at the same time, the movies are out there. I just think people don't want to admit that there's something internal that makes us not want to see these stories. And that would exist whether there was a movie or not. You either want to know or you don't want to know.
Yeah. I mean, what was it? USA Today says, you know, Best Man race themed movie. It's about a bunch of people getting together who know each other in college.
Right. Yeah. It says it was like, Best Man Holiday, another, continuous trend of surprising success for race themed movies. And that's not a race themed movie. Even the other movies that are race themed, why is the success so surprising at this point? Like, at what point? And for the record, the intent of the article, I actually understand and I agree with. I don't know why he didn't want to just say black, which would have been fine. These are black movies. But the question then becomes, why the hell is everybody so surprised that these movies continue to, like, make so much more money than their budget. Like, at some point you got to say, we need to crank more of these out, right?
Yeah. And this has been going on since the 70s. Articles like this were written about blaxploitation. Mm-hmm. Articles like this were written when Eddie Murphy became a box office success. When we had Eddie Murphy and we had Richard Pryor's box office success. It was written in the 90s when we had the neo-blaxploitation with the Boys in the Hood and, you know, all of that. Surprising! Black movies make money. We had it with Zia, and I'm not even going to go there with that. You know, black people spend per capita the most on movies in the country. We go and we support all these white-themed movies. You know, why wasn't American Pie a white-themed movie about people getting together? You know, who went to high school together, you know, every couple of years. No, because white movies are seen as universal. It's very narcissistic and arrogant and egotistical. I won't call it racist. I just call it narcissistic and arrogant and egotistical.
It is.
So it's very hard for them to see other people in the center of anything, whether it's films, books, TV shows. It's very hard for them to, you know, people are freaking out. We got, you know, this year, for a period of time, there were two shows starring black male and three shows starring with black females in the lead. You had to have Dish Network, cable, and network TV to see them all.
Mm-hmm.
But compare that to the oceans of films about white people.
Right.
With black people, Hispanic people, Middle Eastern people, Native American people, Asian people go to see every single day. But there is this constant anger and consternation. Like, I want to see black nativity.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go on the IMDb board, they're like, I don't want to see this trash. This movie stars two Oscar winners. It is directed by a woman whose first film, Eve Fires, is one of my favorite movies, won the Independent Spirit Award. That's one of the biggest independent movie, that is the biggest independent movie film award that you can win.
Mm-hmm.
Period. She did this. She did Caveman Valentine. She does a lot of TV work because nobody gives her the money to make the movies that she makes because they're about black people. And now she's done this. But black people are like, this is garbage. It's just like Madea. And why we got to be black nativity? People would have a
Wait, hold up. Hold up. But isn't it based off of Langston Hughes' poem?
Yeah.
Like, that was the name of it. It's not like they chose to name the movie that randomly.
Yes, but people are up in arms. It's racist. It's black nativity. This is a play that was written in 1951. they should have changed the name. You know? And you've got all of these Christmas movies with white in them. But they weren't about, you know, but they weren't about white people.
Right.
Every movie, have you seen but like Christmas? And they just, this person went down the list about 20.
Not to mention, they've already taken Black Christmas because they made it a horror movie. We can't even have that. So you gotta go with what you could get. Well, the other thing, like, for that movie, I saw the trailer for it, and, the only reason I probably won't go see it is because I don't watch musicals, but I didn't have any, like, this is gonna be garbage type of feelings about it. It's just, I mean, I don't like musicals as a genre, so I probably won't go, like, I didn't go see that, rock and roll joint with Tom Cruise from last year. I haven't seen the Barber of, whatever street, like, with, Johnny Depp, or the one he made about being a vampire last year as a musical. But to just diss it because it's black people in it, I do feel like that is, that's just a thing that people got to start getting over, man. Like, I really hate when black people only go in on something because it's black, because we already have a whole world of that doing it to us constantly. Why should we be a part of it?
Mm-hmm. There is this great article talking about why black people don't see black movies on Shadow and Act. Mm-hmm. And literally it talks about what I've been talking about, that most white people are very invested in seeing themselves in the center of things, and that they really do not see black people as human. And that's why they can whitewash all these movies. There is a movie being cast right now called Gods of Egypt. Mm-hmm. Gods of Egypt, you've seen, you know, the brown and the black picture, the black skin and the brown skin pictures of these gods.
Yeah.
All white cast.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you know what else they did that to was Prince of Persia. No black people in that shit. I'm just like, what? Where do, but it is the arrogance and the privilege of being white. It's just everything is by default white, or else why care? You know what I mean? Cause if it's not white, they ain't gonna watch it. And if it is white, who cares if it's historically accurate? We got white people now.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to make a movie, Prince of Persia, you're not going to have one Middle Eastern person in it. Not one. Not one. I'm like, you know, the people, the way they drew the people in the video game was more Middle Eastern than movie.
It was. It absolutely was.
You know, and you've got the movie, and you've also, there's this genre of movies where white people go to these exotic locales and never see the people who live there except as they walk by them.
Right.
You know, like the Mummy movies. You know, it got better as that series went on. You know, but, you know, the beloved Indiana Jones.
That's one of the best white privilege movies of all time.
Impossible white man movie.
Not just Impossible White Man. The very premise of the movie is, I'm gonna go take this shit from this indigenous culture because it belongs in a white people museum. That's like the whole impetus of this movie. Is just like, the people who created and worshiped this could not possibly know what to do with it.
Exactly. And you know, and people, one of the biggest ways that people learn about people of other cultures, especially when it's segregated, when it's a segregated place, is through film and TV. And our movies get exported all over the world. Is there any reason that Africans come here and think African Americans are crazy, insane, dope smoking, you know, criminals, and African Americans think, wow, did you just take the burn out your nose? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I tell people here in the Midwest, because, you know, I'm some kind of exotic person, the first thing they tell me is, like, can you get me some ganja? I just walk away.
For their protection.
Walk away. You know. But so it's a very big pattern, and you've got a few movies this year that are breaking this pattern. You know, you have the movies like The Butler, which are very similar to, you know, we have the noble black person, you know, who suffers, and, you know, Black Panthers are the devil.
Right.
That's not really how it happened, but that's very much in the vein of how Oprah Winfrey has done many of her movies, and that's, you know, Lee Daniels loves to see black people suffer. That's the kind of movie he makes. Mm-hmm. I would just like him to make a movie where black people just frolic in the fields. You know, have a picnic. Have the world do this stupid shuffle.
Now, what about the idea? Because I do think that there's different perspectives and artistic license and stuff like that. And I, you know, I welcome it, to be honest. Like, I like that there's a person that does the butler. But if there's a person that does the butler, then I need there to be a person that does 12 Years a Slave. You know what I mean? So, which is what, like, to me, it kind of erases, like, okay, Django's not historically accurate, but 12 Years a Slave is. I just wouldn't point someone to Django if they want to see, like, a slave movie. If they want to see, like, yeah. What was slavery like? I would go, don't go watch that. Go watch that if you want to watch Spaghetti Western. But you go watch, 12 Years a Slave. You go watch Sankofa if you want to see, like, what slavery looked like. Do you think we'll get more stuff like 12 Years a Slave? I did notice in the preview for this movie, I want to say Belle was, a movie, that was previewed, and it was about a black girl who I guess was about to be sold into slavery, but her father was like a white like noble person basically, and got her and wanted to have her raised as his daughter. I don't know where the fuck he went off to in the preview. I guess he went off to war and died or something, because they don't show his ass again. But she's raised by these rich white people and all this stuff, and there's like a whole lot about race, and that seems like a movie that's going to have some merit to it. And I, you know, I probably will go see that next year, but will we continue to see this? Oh, say that again.
It's another British movie.
Yeah, it's British. Yep. It's British. That's true. Can't do it with, you know, America.
You literally cannot. I mean, there was a TV movie about a similar situation in America. With what's her name, Jennifer, the girl from Flashdance, who, you know, likes to hide the fact that she's black. I forgot her last name.
Let me get
out of her ass way back when. let me see, Jennifer.
I'll look it up. And Jennifer Beals. Is it Jennifer Beals?
Jennifer Beals.
Oh, there you go.
She played a woman who was a product of the rape between her master and her mother, her slave. But she was raised to believe that she was white. And she married a white man, and her father died and left her all her property. And the father's relatives lost her mind and said, that's a nigger.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about her, actually, the first person who actually won. But until her father died, she didn't know that her mammy was really her mother.
Wow.
So she wrote a book. There are several of these books in America, but it's doubtful because of, you know, all the things we've discussed that, Harriet Jacobs' movie, where this woman hid for 12 years in an attic to be near her children because she had to run away because her master wanted to rape her. But she entered into a voluntary relationship with another white man who said he was going to free her and her children, and of course he lied. So to stay near her children, Harriet Jacobs hid in a crawl space for 12 years so she could watch over her children. It's called Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl. You know, you have these things in America, but they're never going to be made here because the funding system is different in England. You know, there are less black people in England because, you know, after my parents' generation came in, the racists passed bills that said you could only come into the country if you were a relative of a black person, who's already here, or if you were going for education. So it drops the amount of people started coming to Canada. And when the ban against black people from the West Indies coming to America was dropped, they started coming to America. So, and then they did the same thing with Indian people. Altogether, the black and brown population of England is about 13-14%. Together. Mm-hmm. And they're concentrated in cities, so they make up a big part of the urban cities, but they're not out in the little rural towns and the smaller towns. So, you know, they're much more vocal. and the state is very invested in having British cinema, so there's money available for people to make films like this. Mm. Where in America, you know, Spike Lee has to go on Kickstarter and then go on TV because white people want to know why this rich black man, you know, has to go to Kickstarter to get money. And then he has to go and own them on TV because, you know, people hate Spike Lee.
Yeah.
And I have, you know, my criticisms of Spike Lee, and I have my work with Spike Lee. But Spike Lee rubs white people the wrong way no matter what he does.
Mm.
You know, you mentioned Old Boy earlier. People are like, it's violence! Love your movie! I'm like, did y'all actually read where this is a remake of a violent, twisted, bloody movie?
Yeah, I've seen the original. I've seen the original, and I kind of want to see this one too. And what's funny is what's making me want to see it more is the negative reviews, because I'm like, yeah, it can't possibly be that bad. And then also, if you're upset because it stayed, because it's too bloody and violent and all this stuff, then that's good, because that's what the first movie was. And that's why I was actually afraid he wouldn't do it. Because I don't know if you remember, for a little while, Will Smith was cast as the lead in this.
I was like, no.
Yeah.
This won't work. Yeah.
Yeah. And I said, he won't do it. Like, Will Smith does not have, the fortitude to do what it takes to keep this movie good. And, as soon as they said he wasn't doing it, I was like, okay, I'm gonna watch it now. So yeah, I'll probably go see it, in the next week or so, just because, yeah, of the reviews, which is, you know, ironic because they're trying to give it bad reviews, but, you know, I want to go see why they think it's so bad then, because it sounds good to me.
Yeah, a couple of people gave it a good review. I think part of it is Spike Lee hate, part of it is Old Boy fanboyism, and Old Boy is one of my favorite films. I love Korean revenge films.
Mm-hmm.
They do not play. They are violent.
Real.
They,
yes,
are gritty, but the time they finally catch up with the dude, they want revenge. You are yelling. You don't understand a thing. You're trying to read the subtitles, but you're yelling, screaming, kill him, cut off his stuff, torture him. He deserves it.
Yeah, I've watched quite a few on Netflix. A lot of them are streaming. I don't know if they still are, but yeah, I watched quite a few.
Yeah, an Old Boy is bloody, it's violent, it's twisted. And when I heard they were going to keep the same kind of twist in it,
mm-hmm,
I'm like, okay, I might see this. But the reviews are literally insane. Mm-hmm. Now, this movie won the first action movie and the first Korean movie ever to win Cannes, the biggest film prize you can win, bar none. Basically, because Quentin Tarantino was the head of the jury, and he wished he could make a movie this good.
Mm.
But it's like people didn't see that other movie because they're like, Josh Brolin is such a bastard in this movie. You need to check out Odaisu. You know, the guy who plays the guy who, you know, he has revenge on us, is crazy and theatrical and mean. You need to see the guy who plays it in the Korean movie. Yeah, he's rich, he wears suits,
yep,
he's suave, he's got a great butt.
Ah!
But he's crazy as hell.
Right.
And I don't understand why, you know, people just falling over themselves to praise this Korean movie.
And they weren't doing that for, like, it's funny though, because they weren't doing that for Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And that was a movie that, you know, had an original movie. It was dark. They remade it as an American movie. And I didn't catch all this flack, you know, of like, you can't touch this movie, you know?
Yeah, Yeah, and I liked the foreign one better because they had to take out some of the stuff because she just wouldn't be likable for American audiences. They made her a little nicer.
Yeah,
and they made her a little less gay. You know? And, you know, they did. But, you know, you didn't see people. And it's not like I think every Spike Lee movie is a masterpiece. He's made some bullshit movies.
Yeah.
But you got to find it funny that the biggest moneymaker that he made was not advertised as Spike Lee directing it. Inside Man made buku bucks. But people just thought it was a movie with a whole lot of stars in it, with Denzel Washington and Clive Owen. It wasn't until after that people knew that it was a Spike Lee movie, the same thing with 25th Hour.
Mm-hmm.
And now, even though Inside Man made a whole heap of money, you can't find money to make Inside Man 2.
Yeah, it's weird, man, because I like Spike. And, you know, Spike does run off with the mouth, and he'll go in on folks and all this stuff. But I like that about him, that he is opinionated and he's not scared to speak his mind, even if it might hurt his career or hurt people that, you know, hit the opinion that some people have of him. And I remember during the Django thing, bringing it back full circle, I guess, when Django came out and he was like, I'm not going to see it. You know, it's embarrassing and all this stuff. And, you know, I was like, I did go see it. I did enjoy it. But a lot of people that, you know, we would talk to on the podcast, a lot of people I would talk to in my personal life would be like, man, fuck Spike Lee. Why is he don't want to see these people make it. He's so petty, blah, blah. And I always had to remind people, like, you know, without Spike Lee, none of this shit comes to pass. There's no Django if there's no Spike Lee. Like he does deserve, like, be mad, you know, disagree with him if you want to even. Don't take away that man's place in black cinema, because he's responsible for a lot, if not all, of a lot, you know, the stuff that we see currently with black stories being told anyway. Especially by black people, any story that is told in Hollywood by a black person, you got to give some credit to Spike Lee. I don't give a fuck what he said.
I mean, the first time I sat down in a movie theater and saw people like me was in Spike Lee movies.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw Brooklyn, I was like, I was like that little girl. When I saw She's Got a Head Up, it's like, I know these artsy fartsy boho dudes. I know Soul Gold Joe called that dude. I know Mars Rocket. I know these people. And I sat there and I was in shock.
Yes.
I'm Greek. And I went to see School Days, and for the first 10 minutes, I couldn't even close my mouth because I couldn't believe I was seeing people like I know on the screen.
Right.
And you can't take that. You're exactly right. You can't take that away. If there was no Spike Lee, there would be no Samuel L. Jackson or old boy supporting his movies.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, yes, you can be arrogant, you can be loud now, but white directors get to do that all the time.
And you don't take the work for granted. Is, you know, like, you can't, like, I think there's, like, there is this supposition when it comes to a lot of stuff, like when people make a step forward for, you know, any minority group, any marginalized group, there's always this idea that, you know, 10 years later, 20 years later, it's almost like, well, somebody would have did it anyway. Right. But that was the person who did it. You know, that was the person who did do it. So let's not lose that respect. You know, I have no issue with people saying, I don't like what he said about, say, Tyler Perry or something. Do what you got to do. You don't got to agree, but don't sit up here and be like, fuck him. What did he ever do? What a lot of shit is what he did. And you wouldn't be able to watch any of this stuff, to disagree with him about if it wasn't for him.
I had this fantasy that I was going to transfer to NYU Film School, get into one of his classes, and ask him, Professor Lee, why do you make Feet Hate Me? Why? You know, that fantasy will never happen, But, you know, yes, he's just not a perfect person, but neither is Clint Eastwood. Neither is all these Oscar, you know, neither are any of these directors we talked about. But because he is, you know, unapologetically black,
yes,
and centers black people in his movies, it makes people angry. I mean, I remember watching this show on Independent Film Channel, and it was just a bunch of actors sitting around having dinner. And they did it with, it was Josh Favreau, the guy who directs Iron Man and who went to my high school. Some clients, yay! and he, a lot of the people sitting at the table had been in, like, Son of Sam and 25th Hour, and the one other guy who hadn't been in movies with Spike Lee asked, well, isn't Spike Lee racist? And all the rest of the turnaround looked at him like, I think the one was like Jennifer Esposito, and she usually doesn't, you know, suffer fools gladly. He was like, he hired us.
Right.
He made a movie about white people.
Right.
How is he racist?
Right.
And other people went on talking about, oh, and his acting process and how he made it comfortable and blah, 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 and so on and so forth. But this guy literally was like, oh, Spike Lee, he's racist. And now I can talk to you white people about it because you know him and you know he's racist.
Yeah, you'll finally confirm what I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, you know? Man. That, well, you know, First, to bring it back to 12 Years a Slave real quick, because I know we're all over the place, and I know people listening, it's like, man, I didn't know y'all were going to talk about it. I didn't either, guys, but you know how it is. You get
no, neither did I. I run into math. Like I said, I have a useless degree in this, and I welcome, you know, bending anyone's ear about it.
No, I actually appreciate it. I was going to say, now that I've seen the movie, there's only one critique of the movie that I have, right? Cause, I feel like for people that are like black historians, this movie for you guys, and this is the analogy I came up with. I don't know if you understand it, but you seem to have some nerd background, so I think you'll get it. This is your Man of Steel movie, right? Because for me,
it's my Avengers actually, cause I found Man of Steel kind of like,
Well, let me explain why I say Man of Steel. Let me explain real quick. I have watched all the Superman movies, even that terrible one, Superman Returns. I've watched all of them. And I understand what other people think Superman is. Superman is a very kind, generous person that tries to do the right thing. He's for truth, justice, in the American way. And I get it. I dig it. I'm not saying anyone's necessarily wrong, but for me personally, Man of Steel will always be the definitive Superman movie because they finally showed an unflinching look at the destructive power of a man that is just he's like a nuclear explosion waiting to happen at all times. And I finally got to see it and I said, yes, yes, 1,000 times yes. This is what it should look like when you see a superpowered man fighting a superpowered person in the middle of a city. It should destroy everything. And people rejected it. You know, I don't want to see it. It's too many people died. It was destructive. Oh, it's so bad. Why didn't he save any babies? And I was like, but you don't understand. This is what it would look like. You can't really do, you know, beams through someone's eye and throw someone through a building and no one get hurt. It would look like this, guys. And they said, I don't care. I reject it. And I feel like that's what 12 Years a Slave is for people that have been waiting for a valid look at this is what slavery is. And there's no white superhero savior people. It's just fucked up.
Yes, exactly. I see your analogy completely because I remember when it came out, people were doing death tolls.
Yes.
And I was like, yeah, that really should be. I mean, I went to see the first Superman, and literally, he threw a Marlboro cigarette truck, and that was it.
Yes.
That was it. They didn't have the special effects
right.
And whatever. You know, I remember as a kid watching Black and White Superman, you know, nobody really even died.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I definitely see your point.
Yeah, it won't make you feel good at the end. Like, you won't leave Man of Steel. You won't feel this, like, yeah, type of feeling. You feel like a, almost like a relief. Like, God, man, that was brutal. He killed a dude. He's the last person of his race, and he's on Earth now. A whole city was destroyed.
His crazy daddy dead. He ain't got nobody but his poor mama.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
The dog dead. Like, everybody dead. Cause when they came back, I don't know if people noticed, but it was a different dog than that first dog that went into the everything bad happened to that dude. And I felt complete, because I said, that is a better story. It's darker, but it's better. And I feel that way about 12 Years a Slave. The one critique I was going to say is, I wish they had taken like 5 minutes, maybe just 5 additional minutes to the front of the film and showed him more like doing stuff with his family, and like just a little, like even if it was like a montage, like up where it's just like, time going by as Solomon, you know, as a free man, is enjoying himself, and just a like just the things that come with freedom. And they did it once in a flashback when they showed him shopping. But I really wish they could have done a little more up front, because it jumps right into like he was tricked, he was sold into slavery. And because I didn't cry during this film, but I cried during the Best Man Holiday. And I realized the only reason I cried, I think, is because there were some moments where they were having so much fun that when bad stuff happens, it's like, oh, this is real bad. And I wanted that from 12 Years a Slave. I just like 5 minutes. What do you think about that?
Well, partly it's the style. It's his style. If you watch his earlier movies, like Shame and Hunger, that's partially his style. And it's also a style of film called neorealism, which really, it's mostly done in Europe, but it's really used as a way to strip away what regular films that, you know, you just sit there and watch do, so that you can see the social injustice.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and also, there weren't that many flashbacks, because remember when he was first talking to the woman who was crying, and he was like, have you stopped crying for your children? And he said, they're in my heart.
Yes.
He literally had to hide those memories.
Yes.
So, it wouldn't make a lot of sense to keep having flashback to that, because you had to hide all that stuff to survive.
Right.
You saw enough to know that this man had a good life, that his life was precarious, because you saw that slave run in.
Mm-hmm.
Because that slave was running in to say, I'm in a free state.
Yes.
You know, and I want to claim my freedom. And his master came and said, come on, boy.
Yeah, that scene was so crazy powerful, because he even kind of tapped into Solomon's privilege a little bit too at the time, because even Solomon was like, what are you doing here? You know, kind of like, well, what was that all about?
I'm a good man.
Yeah.
You know?
I got papers. Get out of here.
Yeah. You know, when he was treating them, you know, these small towns up in New York, there weren't too many black people in them. And, you know, New York was one of the very early, you know, states that will stop this mess. So if you have a small amount of black people and you have the right sentimentality, yeah, he could live his life pretty much free of that, except for those kind of reminders.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see how he changed throughout the film.
Yeah.
So part of it is because of McQueen's style. Part of it is because he took this specific kind of film movement, is what we call it, because it came out of World War II and a lot of movies made in Europe that just showed the devastation, you know, and the poverty and the demoralizing situation that Europe was left in after World War II, you know, crumbling buildings and people, you know, eking out livings. And these are very moving films, and they're very hard to see. There's one movie called Paisan, which has one, it's three movies in one, and there's a short movie about a black soldier who's an MP in Italy. And he becomes friends with this little Italian boy who really doesn't understand a thing that he says, but he gives him chocolate. And he sits there and he starts talking about, I'm doing all of this work here and freeing, you know, I helped free you guys, but when I go home, they could lynch me. Mm. But that was in an Italian movie. You weren't going to see that in an American movie.
Right.
But he, you know, he is English. He had access to those films when he went to film school. And, you know, to do that before he...
Ironically, Spike Lee did that with Miracle at Santa Ana, but, you know.
Yeah. No. And they just bashed Miracle at Santa Ana. Mm-hmm. And Miracle at Santa Ana is based on actual military documents.
Yep. It's a good movie, too. I liked it.
Yeah, it was. It was a good movie.
Yeah.
And people got on set. Why? Because it was about black soldiers in the middle saving Italian people.
Yep.
The Italian people were like, "Sons, okay, we want to see this movie."
Yeah.
He got part of his funding from Italy
mm-hmm.
to make that movie.
But
it, you know, it all goes around and around in a lot of things we've been talking about.
Yeah.
That I think are going to be more of these movies.
I hope so. They're making money. And, like, if nothing else, this is still America, and it's still capitalism. It's making money. It doesn't even really, like, I don't even care what people's moral stances are anymore. You can't defend not making these movies when they make money. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no excuse.
Yeah, and the thing is, especially now since we have, you know, media and movies and things like this, you know, I saw, I think, one 12 Years a Slave advertisement. It probably did here in this big, you know, edge of, you know, Confederate land at the tip of Illinois. It mm-hmm. didn't play here.
Yeah.
You know, if I hadn't gone to Philly, I wouldn't have seen it.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And it's hard. It is hard to cut a trailer for it. Cause you gotta give McQueen his props. He didn't really skirt around anything. So, mm-hmm. so there's not a lot in a trailer that, like, I was looking through this movie, like, what would you put in a trailer? There's like maybe that part where they zoom in on his face aging. Maybe the far from the store, maybe when he goes out for drinks, and the rest of this is just
running, you know, when he's running.
Yeah.
It's very hard to do that.
It's so harsh. You know what the trailer should have been? It should have been, Paul Giamatti saying nigger 37 times when he was trying to sell him. That would have best encapsulated the movie.
People like the N word. They say it too much in 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah.
There were actually articles
wow.
about this.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, are you kidding? Yeah. And that's another reason I would like to see. I believe there is a difference between A and ER.
Mm.
And listen, white people, I'm sorry. I forgot, I think it was, who was it? Who made the joke that there was Chris Rock? There was somebody sitting on his yacht saying, life is not fair because I cannot say nigger.
Right.
You know? Come on.
Yeah.
You know? And even for, and the secret that black people don't like to say is we use nigger too. We use nigger to talk about niggers.
Mm-hmm.
Like the aforementioned Chris Rock. We do use that. And if you really see how it's used, like in that scene where in the courtyard, he talks, I think it's the there are about four of them, and there's this one guy who's saying, my master gonna come get me. My master gonna come get me. And it's, I think, him and another free guy who was kidnapped. And he talks about these, you know, these slaves born in captivity. They ain't good for nothing. They can't do nothing. They can't see nothing. And then that man came and got that place.
Yes.
And he's like, and someone was like, dude.
What about me?
Remember what I said? Dude.
Yeah. Remember us? We was just talking. You remember? Revolution on the boat. Slavery is wrong. Bye.
So there are different ways to even reuse that. So that's another thing that we don't want to face, which goes into the whole self of self-hatred that was drilled into us from for 340 years. Slavery in this country started in 1526. It did not start in 1619. It started when the Spanish brought slaves over here. And the slaves revolted and destroyed the colony. That was the first slave rebellion. So it was, you know, they like to count it like just when British got here. No, there were French people here. There were Spanish people here who brought their, who brought slaves. Slavery happened for 340 years, and then you have 100 years on top of that of Jim Crow.
Right.
And this movie is important because it reminds you of how that brutality has bred that mentality and how we're still dealing with it. We're still dealing with it.
Yep. I think it's an important movie, and I think that the fact that it is unflinching is the best quality of the movie. And I do understand that for some people it's going to be tough to watch. I'm not one of those people, and I actually think Steve McQueen kind of did everybody a service by not doing the upfront like montage of Solomon with his family and all of this stuff, because I think I would have cried the entire movie if that happened. But, you know, but at the same time, I wondered, like, I was like, if he wanted to break us, all he got to do is show him. Because, like, Convention A. Wallace was his daughter in this movie, I believe. So, yeah. Like, he could have just showed us some Convention A running around, being beautiful and black. And then just showed the fact that this man was not going to get to see her for 12 years. Yeah, I would have been crying like a motherfucker. I would have been in the front row sobbing. And I know a lot of people cried anyway, but...
At the end, it got me. It was like that scene in Color Purple.
Yes.
When Celia and her sister finally meet again. I was just like, oh God, I'm gonna ball like that. Yeah.
And all he could say was, I'm sorry. All he kept saying was, I'm sorry. And I was like, but it's not your fault. Everybody knows. And he's like, I'm sorry. And I was like, okay, I gotta go. But it is a really good movie on top of, you know, being an important movie. And I think a lot of people are, you know, they publicly protest on Twitter and stuff because there's a defiance, you know, like I will not be forced to feel this way. You're not going to make me, feel, you know, negatively. But I think with all black things, black people, we love them. Even if we don't think we do. And a lot of black people are going to see this in the privacy of their own homes where they can feel however they feel and nobody's, you know, watching them. No, they don't have to walk to their car afterwards. They don't have to do whatever. Cause I know a lot of people that said that. And then they said, well, when it comes out on Blu-ray, of course I'll get it and I'll watch it. And I'm like, well, that's the same thing. You know, you're still going to watch it.
And it's also, it can be, I've seen a lot of black women say, let's see this. This is like white man slave porn. And I've got to say, no, this is your history.
Yeah.
This is why you light-skinned it. Okay? You may not want to face it, but this is what your mama survived through so that you could be here. You should be able to sit for 2 hours and 10 minutes.
Yeah, I just think also, if we're being honest, it's not the most brutal movie. it's more brutal in our minds because it happened. But motherfuckers go to the movies and see worse shit. Like, if you've ever seen The Passion of the Christ, if you've seen any of those Saw, if you've seen any of the Saw movies and all this Halloween shit, you've seen people get fucked up way worse than this movie. So don't, it's not really a good excuse to be like, well, it's going to be so brutal. A lot of the shit that you see is brutal already. This is brutal because you know it happened for real.
Exactly. And yeah, there's a part of us that doesn't want to deal with it. I mean, we go to the church, they go to mosque, they go to all of this, and go talk about, you know, they were slaves in Egypt. But nobody talks about we were slaves here on a regular basis. It's just not in our regular conversation.
That's true.
And, yeah, it's because, you know, as much as white people will say, well, get over it, there's a part of us saying, yeah, we want to forget it. We don't want to deal with it. But I really, you know, and this is putting on my social worker hat, too. I really think as a people, you know, as West Indian people, as South American black people, as African American people, we need to face this. Be able to get over it because there are so many connections. Black people are still being industrialized and made money off of through this whole school to prison system. And many of the ideologies behind slavery, that these are animals, these are, you know, baboons, he said, you know, they belong in jail. Why put money into schools when we know these people are naturally criminal and immoral and violent? Put money in the prisons because that's where they belong. They deserve longer, you know, they deserve longer times in jail because, like the man said, they're not human, and if you treat them like humans, you're bound to regret it.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, and I think a lot of black people could learn, you're not gonna walk out of these movies, you're not gonna learn a lot of these lessons and walk away with like a type of, pat on the back accomplishment, but, there is a value in knowledge, and, I think we can't dismiss that, because, you know, I don't just mean because, like, well, we won't repeat it, like you said, it's not just being repeated, some stuff never stopped. And, you know, you can't make that connection if you refuse to acknowledge, you know, the foundation of so many of America's greatest sins. And I feel like black stories and black history and black cinema and all this is American cinema. It's the most American of all the stories to be told. Black people's story is the most American story because it is literally the shithill of the boot. And that's where you learn about the character of anything is how it kicks you, how it does when you're down, not how it treats you at the top. So, I do hope that people listening to this, you know, go see the movie. I do hope that, and I'm not telling you how to feel. Like, I watched this movie, guys. If you follow me on Twitter, I live tweeted it. I found jokes where I could because that's how I deal with tragedy. And at the end of the day, I still was like, I'm glad I saw it. I feel better for seeing it rather than ignoring it. So I would suggest anybody listening to this, I hope we've intrigued you enough to make you think like, should I go see this? I think I'll go, you know, I'll check this movie out.
You know, I hope I, you know, I'm in the chat room sometimes when I'm able to listen to it live, you know, I download your stuff a lot. You know, and, you know, folks out there, I really hope you do, or, you know, if you feel more comfortable waiting to see it in the comfort of your home, please do, because it's, you know, if you want to, you know, put it, you know, one way, it's the roots of, you know, movies.
Right.
You know, and if you feel more comfortable, you know, with your popcorn, with your girl, sitting there on it, you know, able to stop it and check the scores, you know, in the middle of the movie, fine.
Yeah.
But see it.
Go see it, man.
Go see it.
And you know, I forgot to mention this. The people that did this movie the biggest disservice were the people who went and saw it and tried to make it all about them by coming back and being like, it will break you. You will cry for 47 hours. You will never see anything the same, because you made people that were on the fence go, yeah, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be crying for 48 hours. It's a movie. You will walk out and you'll still be free, guys. You can go to your car. You can go anywhere you want to in the world. You'll be fine. It was a 2-hour movie and it was very good. And the same way you would go see, Schindler's List, the same way you would go see, Milk, or go see, Malcolm X. It's the same, guys. Nothing bad's gonna happen to you because you saw this movie. You'll be fine. Trust me. It's educational, but it's also well acted and well done. That was the thing that I think even made me be like, I don't know, I'm gonna watch this. Everybody talking about you gonna cry all day. And I saw it, I was like, that was good. Why'd everybody say that? But anyway.
Yeah. Very true.
Make sure you guys go check out, Friday Foster over at Angry Black Woman Watch, abww.wordpress.com. I have a link to it in the show notes. You can follow her on Twitter at Minnow Warrior. I gotta ask, what does Minnow Warrior mean?
The minnow were the R and were the royal female guards of the king of Dahomey. They are the original black Amazons. They are the badasses.
Oh, okay.
If you look up MINO and Nigeria, mm-hmm. You have to see the pictures, you know, and I was like, yeah. If I was back then, that's what I want to be. So okay. That's where that comes from.
Because you used to have a different title, right? It was like Isha Woman or something? Yeah. What did that one mean?
That was actually the name of one of them. One of the badasses. And I was like, okay, this is not general enough. Let me change it to this, because people could actually, Google this and see what it's about.
Man, I normally try to avoid talking to people smarter than me, but you're teaching me stuff all the time. So
I wasted a lot of money and I have gigantic student loans that will never get paid off for that.
Now,
I'm an incredible amount of debt.
I think you're about to set the record probably for the longest one of these interviews that I've ever done.
I do ramble on.
Well, what I was going to say, what's funny is I let it go long because I remember you thinking that you wouldn't want to do this. And now I feel like I've exonerated myself. Nobody can feel like I blackmailed you because I didn't force you to talk.
I am not with the occult leader. I am not with
you. Well, thank you so much.
Well played.
Well, I definitely enjoyed this and I can't wait to get it out.
I have to say, I have enjoyed it. Yes, say hi to Karen for me. Give her a hug.
I will.
And
she was.
I will do friends to you guys. I enjoy your show, and I'm very happy at your success.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And she was very nervous. Probably. I hope she listens to this episode and in its entirety, because she was like, this woman was mad at me because I ain't go see 12 Years a Slave. I said, Karen, that's Friday Foster.
You can't never be mad at you. I was mad at basically everybody who was like, I'm going to see this. If I was a slave, I wouldn't have been like this man. If I was a slave, I would have been a vessel. You know, I want to see this. And you know, people saying that Steve McQueen was a white man, and why are these English people doing this? And, you know, and they got this African man in, and I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Don't worry. I vouch for you, so you're good. You're good to go. Karen, people don't know, Karen's way more block friendly and will cut somebody off way more than I do. So I vouch for you, and you're good to go. So no worries.
Oh, okay.
make sure you guys check out more Medium Talk, man. We have more of these coming out on the Blackout Tips Premium Network. And we'll talk to you guys later. Peace.